So last week we saw that David seemingly had a golden opportunity to be at last free from Saul and take his life, but he refused to accept it, saying, "The Lord forbid that I should do this thing unto my master, the Lord's anointed." So now in chapter 26, we see David again has another chance to get rid of his relentless enemy, Saul. So chapters 24 from last week and chapter 26 of this week are pretty similar, so I'm just going to kind of skim over a little of chapter 26. They are very similar, but there are some differences between the two chapters. So the differences are that, the location in chapter 24, it was in a cave. In chapter 26, it takes place in a camp. The timing was last week was in the daytime, and this week is at night. The activities were that Saul came into the cave in chapter 24, and in chapter 26, David went into Saul's camp. And the responses were that, David cut off Saul's robe, and then this week he takes Saul's jug and spear. So David and Abishai know that Saul's men are coming against them again, and they get up on probably a high hill where they can see from afar Saul's camp with all of his men. And the way that they set up the camp was they had it in a big circle. So they had the armies and the carts all in a circle, and then the men slept in the middle of the circle. So Saul and Abner slept in the circle, and by Saul's head was his spear and his jug. Now, probably there was a small fire burning at night, so it kind of illuminated the camp, so David could see the camp afar off. But David and Abishai came into the camp, and they took Saul's spear and jug. And David did this to show Saul once again the folly of his attacks toward him, that he wasn't out to kill him. Here he had another opportunity to kill him, but he didn't. So he just took his spear and his jug. And then David said to Saul, "Why are you chasing after an insignificant little flea and after a partridge?" Now, a partridge, they can't fly. So partridges, when they hunt them, they run from bush to bush until they become exhausted, and then they catch them. So that's kind of how David felt. He was just running from bush to get away from Saul. And David knew that he had been promised the kingdom, right? The Lord had encouraged him in that over and over, and even Abigail told him last week again and reminded him. But if David took Saul, he would gain the throne immediately, right? His trials with Saul would be over. He would be done with this relentless enemy and this fleeing. But he showed patience in waiting for God's timing. And that can be so hard, can it? Especially when we've been waiting a long time, right? And we want everything now. We rush into things. We make hasty decisions that sometimes we later regret. But David knew that it was the Lord's responsibility to deal with Saul. And again, David shows Saul that he is not out to kill him and the folly of his attacks toward him. Now, Saul knows that David is God's choice and he's seeking to slay him. But David recognizes that Saul is the anointed king and he spares him. So the opposite there is really cool to think about. Okay, let's read verse 21 in chapter 26. "Then said Saul, 'I have sinned. Return, my son David, for I will no more do you harm. because my soul was precious in thy eyes this day, behold, I have played the fool and have erred exceedingly. Now, do you believe that David could believe Saul's words? No, unfortunately, no. Because he said numerous times, over and over and over, he'd repented, but he always returned to his former ways. So how much faith could David put in his words? Probably none, and he didn't. So in chapter 27, we see that David seeks refuge in enemy land. Now, after years of wilderness wanderings, David began to lose sight of God's protective hand, and he became discouraged. The pressure of constantly running from place to place, one step ahead of death, finally took its toll on David, and his faith wavered. He felt overwhelmed and weary, and he had been 7 years in the wilderness hiding from Saul. That's a long time, right? 7 years. I mean, some of our trials, we think, last weeks, months, maybe year, maybe years, but 7 years, that's a long time. And I can understand why David would be weary and tired. He's tired, but he it seems like the Lord is absent, and unfortunately that David isn't trusting in the Lord. So let's read verses 1 to 4 in chapter 27. And David said in his heart, I shall now perish one day by the hand of Saul. There is nothing better for me than I should speedily escape into the land of the Philistines. And Saul shall despair of me to seek me any more in any border of Israel. So shall I escape out of his hand. And David arose and passed over with the 600 men who were with him unto Achish, king of Gath. And David dwelt with Achish at Gath and his men, every man with his household, even David with his two wives, Ahinoam and Abigail. And it came, and it was told Saul that David was fled to Gath, and he sought no more after him. So after such a victory in chapter 26 with Saul, now David compromises. He moves into enemy land. He ends up murdering and lying. And he says, I will perish one day at the hand of Saul. So he goes with his 600 men and their families into the land of the Philistines. And I kind of see David here kind of like a Robin Hood. You know, him and his gang of men, and they're all hiding, you know, and together, they're united together, and they end up staying there for 16 months, excuse me. But during this time, David wrote no songs when he was in this slump. He couldn't sing the Lord's song in a foreign land. And there's no mention of God in this chapter or of prayers even being offered. So it's sad that we see David kind of giving up, giving in to discouragement, being overwhelmed and weary, and just kind of throwing in the towel. So let's read verse 5. And David said to Achish, if I have now found grace in your eyes, let them give me a place in some town in the country, that I may dwell there. For why should your servant dwell in the royal city with you? Then Achish gave him Ziklag that day. Wherefore Ziklag pertaineth unto the kings of Judah unto this day. And the time that David dwelt in the country of the Philistines was 1 year and 4 months. So David asked for a place to live, a village in the country where he and his family and his 600 men and their families could all live together as a community, and Achish gave him Ziklag. Now, there probably were, with the 600 men, their wives, and all their children, it probably came to about 2,000 or 3,000 people. So David had been a fugitive for 7 years when he decided to flee to Gath. But in only 3 more years, David would be reigning as king. But he had no way of knowing this. Only 3 more years. If he just would have toughed it out. Did David give up too soon? Should he have stayed in the land of Israel and trusted the Lord? Probably. Then do we, when we get weary and impatient, when we lose heart, do we give up too soon? David had decided to go his own way and to solve his own problems. Warren Worsby said, when we start to look at God through our circumstances instead of looking at our circumstances through God's eyes, we will lose faith, patience, courage, and the enemy will triumph. Now, the pressure was off because Saul was no longer pursuing him. He wasn't going to pursue him in the land of the Philistines. And David also felt acceptance in Gath. He was welcomed there. They gave him a place to live. And he was given a secure place to live, living there 1 year and 4 months. Now, in verses 8 to 12, I'm just going to tell what happens there is that David and his men go out and they raid tribes who are actually descendants of the Canaanites, whom God before had told Joshua to destroy. They were actually enemies of Israel, but they were allies to the Philistines and to Achish. And they had not provoked this attack. Later, when David was asked by Achish about the raids, David lied, saying that they had actually attacked Israel. So David was gaining favor in the eyes of the king, but not in the eyes of God. Let's look at verse 12. And Achish believed David, saying, he hath made his people Israel utterly to abhor him. Therefore, he shall be my servant forever. Now we see David here practicing duplicity. He's pretending to be a friend of the Philistines, but on the inside, he was and always would be an Israelite. And the Bible warns us about being friends with the world, right? It says that if we're friends with the world, we're enemies of God. And David's duplicity led to a huge dilemma. Because when Achish wanted David then to go to war with him against Israel, David was in a big problem. David had gotten himself into a tangled web, and we do too when we lie to get out of situations. Now we're going to see next week in chapter 29 how the Lord mercifully delivers David out of this dilemma. Now we're going to look at chapter 28, and let's start at verse 3. And we're going to look at Saul seeking the witch at Endor. Now Saul was dead, and all Israel had lamented him and buried him in Ramah, even in his own city. And Saul had put away those who were mediums and wizards out of the land. And the Philistines gathered themselves together and came and encamped in Shunem. And Saul gathered all Israel together, and they camped in Gilboa. And when Saul saw the host of the Philistines, he was afraid, and his heart greatly trembled. And when Saul inquired of the Lord answered him not, neither by dreams, nor by Urim, nor by prophets. So this is one of Israel's darkest hours. The Philistines' army were surrounding them, and Israel was unprepared to fight. Samuel was dead, and he was no longer there to rely on. Saul, it says, was exceedingly afraid, that he actually trembled greatly. And the word tremble there is the same word as when Mount Sinai quaked when the law was given. He was scared to death. He didn't know what to do. And he sought word from the Lord, but no word came. God didn't answer by any of the usual means. So the king was helpless to lead, having deserted the Lord. Now the Lord had deserted Saul. In Proverbs 1:28, it says, "Then shall they call on me, but I will not answer. They shall seek me early, but they shall not find me, because they hated knowledge and did not choose the fear of the Lord." Jerry Vine says, God appeals to some people over and over by calling on them and calling on them. Some people choose to ignore God every time he calls on them. Too much time can pass, though, and a point can be reached where God won't answer. There's a poem that says, "There is a time we know not when, a point we know not where, that marks the destiny of men to glory or despair. There is a line by us unseen that crosses every path, that hidden boundary between God's patience and God's wrath. How far may we go on in sin? How long will God forbear? Where does hope end and where begin the confines of despair? An answer from the skies is sent. Ye that from God depart, while it is called today, repent and harden not your heart." So that was just so heavy when I read that. Just to think about, God knows that there is a point where he gives up on people. He's reached out to them over and over and over again in his grace. And finally he says, "I've had enough. You've drawn the line." So that's what happened to Saul, unfortunately. He knocked on the door of heaven, and there was no answer, so he decided to knock on the door of hell, seeking guidance from the very thing that he had banned. Now, spiritism was a capital crime, and though Saul had abolished it, there were still remnants. Now, there are many scriptures against spiritism in the Bible. Exodus 22:18, "You shall not suffer a witch to live." Deuteronomy 18:10-12, "There shall not be found among you anyone who makes his son or daughter pass through the fire, or who uses divination, or an observer of the times, or an enchanter, or a witch, or a charmer, or a consulter of mediums, or a wizard, or a necromancer. For all that do these things are an abomination to the Lord." Let's look at verse 7. "Then said Saul unto his servant, Seek me a woman who is a medium, that I may go to her and inquire of her. And his servant said to him, Behold, there is a woman who is a medium at Endor. And Saul disguised himself and put on other raiment. And he went, and the two men with him, and they came to the woman by night. And he said, I pray you, divine unto me as a medium, and bring me up him whom I shall name unto you. And the woman said unto him, Behold, You know what Saul has done, how he hath cut off those that are mediums and wizards out of the land. Why then layest thou a snare for my life to cause me to die? And Saul swore to her by the Lord, saying, as the Lord lives, there shall no punishment happen to you for this thing. Then said the woman, whom shall I bring up to you? And he said, bring me up Samuel. Then the woman saw Samuel, and she cried with a loud voice. And the woman spoke to Saul, saying, why have you deceived me? For you are Saul. And the king said unto her, be not afraid, for what did you see? And the woman said to Saul, I saw gods ascending out of the earth. And he said unto her, what form is he of? And she said, an old man cometh up, and he is covered with a mantle. And Saul perceived that it was Samuel, and he stooped with his face to the ground and bowed himself. So we see that Saul and his servants traveled 10 miles north from Saul's camp around Philistine forces, and they disguised themselves because Saul doesn't want to wear his kingly robes. He wants to not be seen. So they disguise themselves and they seek a medium. How very, very sad. Now, the woman asks whom he wanted her to bring up, and of course he says Samuel. Mediums communicate not with the dead, but with a demon who impersonates a dead person. The demon then spoke through the medium. Demons could impersonate the dead, but they could not bring them back. And just a little note here for us, that there's no communication with our dead loved ones. I know I hear a lot of people say, oh, I know he's with me now, you know, but there's no communication. They're not with us, and there's no communication. We're not going to have communication with them until we get to heaven. And the only one that we can communicate is Jesus, our mediator, right? He's the only mediator. But we see that this medium in verse 12, that she screamed at the top of her voice because she saw something that she had not anticipated. This was something that normally didn't happen. She was shocked that Samuel did appear because the Lord allowed Samuel to actually appear. And it wasn't a demon impersonating someone. The medium in verse 12 saw Samuel, but Saul didn't see him. And then in verse 15, Samuel spoke directly to Saul, not through the medium. When Paul the Apostle encountered a sorcerer in Acts 13, he firmly rebuked him, saying, O full of all deceit and all mischief, thou child of the devil, thou enemy of all righteousness, will you not cease to pervert the right ways of the Lord? So we see how mediums, witches, all these kind of people are not of the Lord. They are abomination, and they're not pleasing to the Lord. But many may think it cool to tamper with the occult today. But it is a very foolish and dangerous thing. Now, I remember in high school, I had people that I knew that actually proclaimed they were witches and Satan worshipers. And that was a long time ago. So I can't imagine how bad it is now. But we need to know that it's super, super dangerous. It's not of the Lord that we even become interested or curious about any of these things. They are very dangerous. Astrology, reading your horoscope is very bad. It's satanic. You don't want to do that. You don't need to do that, and God doesn't want you to do that. We need to stay away from astrology, witchcraft, Ouija boards, tarot cards, fortune tellers, and palm readers. They are all super dangerous and an abomination to the Lord. And we need to be on guard against these things. And those of you that have children or grandchildren, we need to be careful about the cartoons and the movies that they're watching, where evil is betrayed as good. You want to be very careful, because so many movies and cartoons are very subtle and trying to corrupt our kids. So let's read verse 15. And Samuel said to Saul, "Why have you disquieted me to bring me up?" And Saul answered, "I am very much distressed, for the Philistines make war against me, and God has departed from me and answers me no more, neither by prophets or by dreams. Therefore I have called thee, that you may make known unto me what I shall do." Then said Samuel, "Why then did you ask of me, seeing the Lord has departed from you and is become your enemy? And the Lord hath done to you as he spoke by me, for the Lord has torn the kingdom out of your hand and given it to your neighbor, even to David, because you obeyed not the voice of the Lord, nor executed his fierce wrath upon Amalek. Therefore hath the Lord done this thing unto you this day. Moreover, the Lord will also deliver Israel unto thee into the hand of the Philistines, and tomorrow you and your sons shall be with me. The Lord also shall deliver the host of Israel into the hands of the Philistines. Now, how could Saul expect a message from Samuel when the Lord had forsaken him? Isn't it tragic that Saul realizes too late how much he really needs Samuel? He had ignored Samuel's prayers, his guidance, and his help all along. He never listened to Samuel. And yet Samuel had such a heart for Saul. It says that he wept and cried for him one time all night. He was so grieved. But Saul never accepted Samuel's help or guidance when he was alive. And now Samuel was no longer there to help. Maybe you too have a grandparent or a parent or a friend that is trying to guide you in the ways of the Lord, and maybe you're ignoring them. One day they may be gone, and then you will wish that they were there to turn to. And that's just such a heavy thought. Maybe we are trying to encourage our kids and our grandkids to follow the Lord, to choose the right path, to put the Lord first, to honor him. And yet they're ignoring us and they don't want to listen to us. They want to do their own thing. But one day we may be gone and they're not going to have us to turn to ask for help or guidance or prayer. And that's what happened with Saul. He waited too long. He didn't listen. Saul had great potential in the beginning, but he fell because of his pride. And he fell not only spiritually, but physically. So let's read verse 20. Then Saul fell immediately to the earth and was very much afraid because of the words of Samuel. And there was no strength in him, for he had eaten no bread all day or all night. And the woman came unto Saul and saw that he was very much troubled and said to him, "Behold, your handmaiden has obeyed your voice, and I have put my life in your hand and hearkened unto your words, which you did speak unto me. Now, therefore, I pray you, hearken also unto the voice of your handmaid, and let me set a morsel of bread before you and eat, that you may have strength when you go your way." But he refused and said, "I will not eat." But his servants together with the women compelled him, and he hearkened unto their voice, so that he arose from the earth and sat upon the bed. And the women had a fat calf in the house, And she hastened and killed it and took flour and kneaded it and baked unleavened bread of it. And she brought it to Saul and before his servants, and they did eat. And they rose up and went away that night. So when Saul heard Samuel's words, he fell helplessly to the floor. He had wanted a message from the Lord, but when it came, it wasn't the message that he wanted to hear. He was trembling with fear, and he was weak from not eating. That Saul had his last supper, a meal fit for a king. It says that the medium brought the meal before Saul and his servants, and they did eat, and they rose up, and then they went out into the night. Now, the saddest thing is that there is no indication that Saul cried out to the Lord here. Even though he knew that he was going to die the next day, you think he would have repented and asked God for forgiveness and help. If you knew you were going to die the next day, wouldn't you want to get right with the Lord? But Saul, there's no indication that he even did that. The Lord had given Saul opportunity after opportunity, but he had ignored them. And now when he was desperate, tragically, it was too late. He was unprepared to lead, he was unprepared to fight, and he was unprepared to die. So lessons that we can learn from our teaching this morning is, when we get weary in our trials and we want to give up, remember that God has a perfect timing. He knows when that trial is going to be over, and we need to be careful not to turn to the world for security, as David did, or to flee to the world. Maybe you haven't turned to the world, but maybe you've kind of just drawn back a little bit in your walk with the Lord. You're not really pursuing him as you once did. Maybe you're just discouraged. You feel like he's let you down. You're bummed out, so you just kind of have taken kind of a back seat. The Lord wants you to keep pressing on. He doesn't want you to turn away or pull back or find security in the world. And then we can learn about duplicity, like David, how he didn't stand for who he really was with Achish. He put on a front that he was with him when he really wasn't. He was trying to please people instead of the Lord. And we need to be careful too, because it's always tempting to want to please people. We want people to like us, right? But we can't compromise. We have to stand for the Lord, no matter if they don't like us, right? And then not ignore godly advice, to appreciate it, to accept it, because one day they may be no longer there to turn to. So any of you that are maybe have a grandmother or a parent or someone, a friend, that you're maybe not listening to their advice, their godly advice, don't ignore them. Listen to them. Take their advice. Heed it, because it's so, so important. You want to appreciate them while they're there with you. So let's pray.